they're not accidentally stumbling upon your podcast about knitting.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
It's Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. I am Dan Franks, coming on in a bit, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra. And before we get on to the showdown, I want to make a very special announcement about something that we're doing right here in Dallas, Texas, our home base, coming up this Saturday, which is October 12th in Dallas, Texas. And that's speaking at PodCamp Dallas for any aspiring podcasters or anyone who just wants to learn more about podcasting as a whole. There's a great event. PodCampDallas.com is putting it on. And again, it's October 12th, Saturday, right here in Dallas, Texas. You can go to that website to find out all the information. And Joe and I are going to be speaking about how to podcast with co-hosts, with partners, whether it's dealing with internal disagreements or leveraging one another's skills to better your podcast, or maybe some of the technical difficulties that arise when you're podcasting with two people instead of one. All of those things we're going to talk about in our hour-long presentation, and we really hope you can join us. Tickets are free. That's right. If you go to podcampdallas.com, you can get free tickets. You just have to sign up and show up. So definitely check that out. Another exciting thing that we want to announce is that coming up on November 2nd, 2013, Joe and I are going to be co-hosting a meetup, also right here in Dallas-Fort Worth, with Jared Easley from Starve the Doubts. If you haven't checked out Jared's podcast at starvethedoubts.com, it's super unique. It's showdown approved. So definitely check out that podcast. But if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, come join us on November 2nd. Check out www.entrepreneurshowdown.com/meetup, and that'll take you to the page where you can RSVP. You can find out all the details, and we'll talk about that more in the coming weeks as we get closer. But all those announcements out of the way, let's get this showdown started. In round one, Joe and I ask the question, should your business match your personality? Then in round two, we'll talk about Ben Kruger and the Authority Engine podcast. And his whole podcast is about podcasting, and he's got a really unique take on some of these things. So Joe and I are going to talk about that in round two. Then in the main event, we bring on Ben Kruger from Authority Engine, and we see what he can teach us to help make our show better. So this is kind of a podcast-centric episode, so it'll benefit you if you've ever wanted to start a podcast or maybe just want to learn a little more. But it's a very interesting conversation that we have with Ben as well. So definitely stick around. But before we get started, just one more reminder for the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And now, finally, let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
Right now, what Joe and I want to look at to kick off round one is the idea that I've heard a lot of people talking about, and there's been a few blog posts that Joe and I have read that have discussed this, and it's the idea of you need to mold your business around your personality. In other words, if you're introverted, then you need a business that doesn't necessarily involve a lot of client or customer interaction. Maybe it's something more where you do a lot of writing and reading and not as much, you know, phone calls or face-to-face interaction. Whereas if you're very extroverted, maybe you need to be a lot very interfacing with clients on a regular basis. And that's how you're going to be most successful for a variety of reasons. And one blog post in particular was written by Sigdim Kobu at sigdimkobu.com. I believe that's her name. It's actually a great article. I've never heard of her before. But she does a lot of coaching for women entrepreneurs. And specifically, she targets the introverted niche because she says she's a big introvert. And she says that if you mold your business around being an introvert, you get the most benefit out of it. And she goes through three main reasons. She said you attract people like yourself that you're more willing and better able to work with. She says you can select the best revenue model based on your personality. And then she says it's going to be more sustainable because you're going to enjoy what you're doing, and therefore you're going to be able to continue it. And I disagree with this, but I want to hear what you think, Joe.
Well, I mean, she gives good points. I think for someone who is trying to then go out of, if they're an introvert and all they see is like the Steve Jobs and people like that who are very aggressive with their sales pitches and everything. You see people like that, and if you try and emulate that and that's not who you are, you're just going to burn out after a while and you're not going to enjoy what you're doing. You may be able to get a couple of clients here and there, but after a while, because introverts, usually they get really drained really quick when they have a lot of face-to-face contact with people or have to speak in front of people. Their energy goes down really fast, so you just burn out after a while. So if you can find those different areas that you can get most of your money from, and she mentions ebooks and such, where maybe you aren't going to make more money than the extroverts just because you won't be able to pitch yourself as hard, but in the long run you're going to be a lot happier.
Yeah, I don't know. See, my take on this is, sure, it's easy to do something that's easy, right? That's, if you stay in your comfort zone, sure, you might be more happy from a, I guess, standpoint of enjoying exactly what you're doing. But if you're going into this as a business, you have to at some point get out of some kind of comfort zone, because if you just stick to the things that you're very good at and very comfortable with, I feel like that's doing yourself a disservice. If you're not breaking out of your comfort zone and maybe extending yourself, like, look at this podcast. I've spoken before. I feel that I'm an introvert, and she mentions the Myers-Briggs test, which I remember taking in school and passing as an introvert with flying colors. But so to me, if I were to read this article and go right along with it, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I wouldn't be talking to our listeners right now. But I feel like because I've done it, a lot of times when I do things like this, when I get out of my comfort zone, I'm not so uncomfortable once I do it, but the thought of it is not enjoyable to me. And if I followed those thoughts, then I wouldn't be doing it.
Well, what makes you think that you're an introvert? Just because some test told you that?
Well, the test told me that, so it's got to be right.
But you're very outspoken with your thoughts, and you have a excitable personality when you speak with other people that I don't think you're an introvert. I mean, maybe you like to read books, but so does a lot of people. That doesn't make you an introvert.
Well, I don't love to read, so I don't think that's a telltale sign of introversion. I think you like to read a lot more than I do, and I think I'm more introverted than you are. But I think one of the qualities of an introvert is we're very social with those who we know and like and trust, that whole thing. If we're comfortable around somebody, then, and I've said this before, sometimes you can't get me to shut up, but with strangers, I'm cowering in the corner of the room hoping they don't look at me. So, and maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I feel like, you know, I am an introvert, and if I tried to push these introversion qualities on my business, it would be very kind of one-dimensional.
But then, so then someone like you that maybe feels that way, you're not gonna go try and start maybe something where you have to interact with people 24/7. I know you did a lot of real estate stuff, and I mean, I don't know much about the real estate. I feel like a lot of them have to be extroverted. So would you say that maybe one thing that you ran into as a problem was because you needed to be more extroverted instead of introverted?
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this before. One of my biggest things was I removed myself from the business too early. And one of those reasons was because I didn't find myself enjoying the phone calls to people. But whenever I was the one taking and making the phone calls, that's when my business was successful. But when I removed myself from it and put somebody else to do that for me, which was my introversion coming out, or my introverted side coming out, that's when the business started going downhill. So when I was staying outside my comfort zone, that's when the business succeeded. So maybe I'm a little jaded in this, because, you know, there's plenty of people that create coaching courses where they're not interacting with people on a daily basis. They just have these courses. They're introverts, and it's working for them. But just to me, because of my experiences, I feel like every time I've been successful has been when I went out of my comfort zone.
But if you had molded something where you were a little more comfortable, and that you were doing something that maybe you didn't feel as uncomfortable as you were doing, like maybe I don't know, like your niche sites, you like doing stuff like that, and you're still building something like that, where if, say, that does become successful, then you'd feel more comfortable doing that than going to start a real estate again.
Well, that's true. So maybe it's the whole idea of past experiences kind of mold your thoughts and how you feel. And like I said, my past experiences show that every time I've been out of my comfort zone, like I am right now. I'm talking to you, so I'm not super out of my comfort zone. But a lot of times when we talk to strangers, I still get that feeling in the pit of my stomach, like, hey, we're about to interview some, you know, whether it's a big name or whether it's just somebody that we're interviewing because we find them interesting. Either way, there are these people I don't know. And luckily, we do audio only interviews. But if I were face to face with them, I feel like I would be even more nervous. That being said, I think what we do here is very good and very beneficial and something that we can grow, and even though it's outside of my comfort zone. So I think that's kind of my case in point, and that's why I feel so strongly about this. So let me ask you, do you feel this way? Do you feel like because you're more extroverted that if you, I mean, you run a blog and we've talked about that before. Do you feel like that blog maybe didn't succeed because it's more introverted based and you're not personally?
Well, that was exactly what it was. I mean, I'll still write on it from time to time, so it's not a dead link. But what happened was is that since I'm just working on building content myself, I just get antsy and I get bored after a while that I'm just sitting here looking at a computer screen. I'm not interacting with anyone. And my favorite part when I was trying to build that was the more interacting with people and talking with them rather than the actual producing of content. So I don't know if that's some of that is writing is not my strong suit. Maybe you can make an argument for that, or maybe just because I didn't like doing something by myself. But the past couple months that we've just done this, I don't feel like I'm out of my comfort zone because I enjoy talking with a lot of people, but I've had more success because I'm working with someone else, which, since you say you're introverted and I'm extroverted, maybe that's just maybe that's why we can work well together, because we're not both outspoken and such. So I don't know.
Maybe that's the key. Maybe the key is if you are introverted or you are extroverted and you really don't want to cross that line to doing the other thing, then it's a matter of finding other people to leverage, you know, leverage other people to cross that side.
But she talks about in the article that you need to get other people at all introverted, which I don't agree with. I think you should, if you can get both sides of it, then you can understand both sides of it. And I know with a lot of introverted people, and I read an article, James Wedmore, he does a lot of video stuff. He says he's very introverted, even though he's on video all the time. And he says one of like the big things that he does is create a support system, and that support system is a mix between all these different people, because you get to understand the other people, and introverted people are a lot bigger on details. They're able to go deep with certain things. When they have conversations with people, they like to go deep. While people like me, if you listen to a lot of the interviews, I usually just hop from topic to topic. I don't go as deep as maybe people in our audience would like to, but. I'm not good with details, and I've told you that as well. But
that's because you don't prepare for 5 hours, Joe.
Yeah, I don't prepare for 5 days like some other people for interviews.
Oh, 5 days. Shoot. Wow. Even more. Yeah. So that's going a little off topic. But you know what? That's something I want to talk about in a future round one, and that's the idea of preparation. I feel like maybe we're getting into the think, act, get territory here, where we put a one-word description on our podcast. That's another topic for another day. But what do you think about Sigmund's, the author of this article that we're looking at? What do you think about her idea of the three most important keys of your business model need to be: 1, attracting the perfect people; 2, selecting the best revenue model; and 3, something that becomes sustainable? She's saying those are 100% based on your molding your business to your personality. So what do you think is maybe one of those the most important, or one of those that she's missing the mark on?
Well, I already said the first one is I don't agree with. I think you should mix it up. The saying is hang out with like-minded people, but like-minded is different than you're all introverted and such. I think if you can learn something from extroverted people, maybe if it is just some sales techniques or how they word stuff, then that can always help. But if you can pick revenue models that work for you, if you think you can make a living off of doing ebooks and just having very small consulting groups that you work with where you get to know them, and so they're perpetual revenue, I mean, maybe that could probably work for you, instead of trying to force yourself to be, you're this introverted person and try to think, okay, I need to try and be Steve Jobs or I want to be like Steve Jobs, because you're not going to be like Steve Jobs because he was, and that's just an example. We always use Steve Jobs as an example, but you can't be like him because he was a very extroverted, very in your face type of guy. And if you're introverted, it's not going to work that way. So just maybe that's crashing some dreams, but don't try and do that. Find something where maybe, yeah, okay, you go a little out of your comfort zone, but don't try and stretch yourself so much that you end up just, hating yourself after a while, or you just blow yourself out. You don't want to do that.
But let's see if we can come up with some, maybe, like you said, we always talk about Steve Jobs. It's hard for us or our listeners to relate to that. So what do you think is an example of somebody that's doing this successfully in our space? Maybe someone our audience is familiar with, maybe a past guest. I mean, like, what do you think? Like Chris Ducker, Pat Flynn, those kind of guys, they're super extroverted, but they also have coaching programs that they're starting. So is that crossing over?
I think Pat Flynn's more introverted. I don't think he's as extroverted. And he does a lot of his stuff is very affiliate type stuff, and he likes to write a lot, and then he does a couple podcasts here and there.
So
and
his whole original business model was that coaching or passive?
His business model is completely introverted type stuff. It's all online. I'm not saying this in a derogatory way. Just by his personality, from us talking to him and other people, I think he's very introverted. But I think when he goes and does those speaking gigs, I think it's one, because he knows it'll help people, and two, I think it's also because, like you said, he does want to push his boundaries a little bit, and he wants to put himself out there. And I know he talks a lot about how he dresses, and I think that's probably a little bit an insecurity type thing, because he is an introverted person.
I mean, at some point you're going to hit that wall. Maybe that's what Pat Flynn hit. I mean, he had his lead book, he had his affiliate products, he was blogging, then someone talked him into podcasting, which grew his audience exponentially. And now he's coming out with some more hands-on coaching products and things like that. So maybe he felt like, or maybe he didn't feel like, but was pointed out to him that he had hit that wall and you need to keep pushing that boundaries. So is it a slow growth that you have? Like, okay, now I'm a little more comfortable, so I'll go one step further. Now I'm a little more comfortable, so I'll go one step further. Or was it just out of necessity that he's having to go past that?
Well, that's a whole nother conversation that could take hours, but maybe it is something, maybe this is the key to take out of this, is that you just start with something small. Don't try and just take baby steps. If you're introverted, take baby steps to doing some little extrovert things here and there. You don't have to throw yourself out into every networking event when you get drained out in social situations like that. So maybe that's something to take out of this. Just take small steps. And like you mentioned, get out of your comfort zone, because that's always a good thing. And we talked about that before with Tim Connolly on a couple episodes ago. So I think just doing little stuff, you don't have to try and make yourself very extroverted, make yourself a Steve Jobs if that's not who you are, because you're going to burn yourself out.
Well, Joe, your mission once we end this podcast is to go lock yourself in a closet and get to learning code or something like that. My mission, I'll go out to a mall and start shaking hands or something. I don't know. You get out of your comfort zone, I'll get out of mine, and we'll both push our boundaries and succeed. But with that, we will go on to round two.
Round two.
What Joe and I want to talk about right now is the whole idea of podcasting as it relates to your business, and maybe just the whole idea of if you should do it for your business, how it will benefit your business, or maybe if there's some other options that might be better uses of your time than producing a podcast for your business. And what this is leading into is bringing on Ben Kruger from Authority Engine, who his full-time job is producing podcasts for some of the biggest name podcasters online right now. So, you know, Joe, you and I, when we first started this podcast thing, we started podcasting because we are fans of podcasts. We didn't already have a business in place that we were looking for some way to get the word out about. But a lot of people aren't in that position. They have a business and maybe they're thinking of starting a blog for it or starting a podcast for it, and they're just not sure what direction to go. And I think you and I have seen such quick success with the podcasting thing that I would, and such slow success in our own ventures into blogging, that I think we would both agree that podcasting is probably the way to go. But then we've talked to Tom Ewer in the past, who's a big time blogger, and he would say that blogging is the way to go and podcasting is a waste of time. So, you know, from my point of view, I think podcasting is a great way to reach out to people. I think it takes less time than blogging. You're able to produce more content, more quality content. But I guess you really do have to have some kind of
idea of what you're doing. You can't just start completely clueless like maybe you can with a blog.
But didn't you say that's exactly what we kind of did? We started completely clueless?
But I don't. We didn't start clueless. We had an idea, and maybe that's what you know what the difference is. You can, because you literally can sit down and start a blog about what you had for lunch, and then you can blog about what you had for dinner, and then you can you can start a blog about anything. Whereas podcasting, I've never heard anyone do that. I've seen plenty of people starting blogs that are absolutely useless information. But most of the people that have podcasts, they have at least something to say. So I don't know. Maybe it's the thought of having at least some sort of idea. But I really do think podcasting, if you're trying to get the most bang for your buck kind of thing, you're going to get more people consuming your content in a podcast than a blog.
Well, I think especially, and we've talked about this with other guests, the rise of podcasting. I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where people are, like you said, people write about what they had for lunch, but will they actually start recording it? I'm not sure if that'll ever happen. I'm sure it will at some point, but I know it's not a big thing now. For a business, I guess it's tricky because if it's a type of niche that a lot of people who are involved in it aren't listening to podcasts on a regular basis, should you try and be like a pioneer for it? I guess for maybe like, I don't know, knitting or swimming or whatever, you don't see a lot of podcasts out there for that, or at least I've never seen them.
So that brings up the question, is that an opportunity or is there a reason for that? Because there are plenty of blogs about knitting that are very successful, but you say maybe there's not any super successful podcasts about that. Is that an opportunity or is that maybe a sign to stay away?
Well, maybe it's if you're trying to differentiate yourself and maybe just for branding purposes, I think you probably could go that way to make some sort of income off of it. I think it's more of a stretch unless you can find a lot of, say, knitting sponsors. But I don't know. I guess like for us, we're a little more general. I know we get very specific with some of the guests, but our genre is very, very wide. So we have a lot of topics that we're able to discuss. While if you go into a very specific niche, I'm sure it can be hard after a while to start coming up with new material on a regular basis. And like you said, I mean, there are some knitting blogs out there, but podcast probably not as much because it's such a honed in niche that it can be hard to come up with material on a consistent basis. So I don't know. That's something we can ask Ben about. How general does a podcast need to be? Because a lot of them that are just in our, since we'll just look at our niche business in general, a lot of the top podcasts are very general podcasts. Like we've talked to John from Entrepreneur on Fire, entrepreneurship in general. Dave Ramsey, we haven't talked to him yet, but hopefully sometime. He's personal finance, very general. And the list goes on and on. While you don't see a lot of very niche specific at the top of that business, on the business podcast side. So I don't know. Maybe that's where podcasting is going, but I haven't seen that materialize yet.
See, to me, if I were to advise somebody who is starting a podcast, I would almost do the exact opposite. I would say find that area where there's not the competition. If you do niche down and there's virtually no competition, I mean, look, I think you and I both agree that podcasting is maybe the way of the future, or at least the big boom right now. This is the area that you want to hop on if you're trying to start something, if you have the capabilities to do it. And if you're going to either start a niche blog or a niche podcast, a lot of these niche podcast areas are not flooded like the blog areas. So if you're able to produce this kind of content, I think the opportunity is much, much larger. And you and I both have seen, you know, we've talked to people who are getting sponsorships for their podcasts. We've heard stories like that. And I think these niche podcasts can get sponsorships even easier because the whole idea of the podcast is people are going, they're not accidentally stumbling upon your blog they're not accidentally stumbling upon your podcast about knitting. They're specifically looking for a podcast about knitting. If you have 100 downloads a day on this podcast about knitting, there are 100 people that are specifically interested in that topic. And to any kind of sponsor that would be sponsoring a knitting podcast, that's golden. Like, where else are you going to find 100 unique people a day that are looking for this, you know, that are looking for this unique niche topic anywhere else. You're not going to find it on a radio or TV or even blogs, because blogs are a lot more diluted with internet traffic. So I really feel like if you can capture a niche audience, that podcasting is an excellent way to go, especially if you're looking to monetize.
Do you have a specific example in mind that you're like using as an example, as a very niche down podcast?
No, but there's a ton out there. I mean, you and I both, when we're checking, you know, we're still in the new and noteworthy section, and we're looking at all the different types of podcasts that are in the general new and noteworthy, not just in business. And you see everything. One of the ones that keeps popping out to me is the gym business one. They're running a podcast about running your own gym and the business side of that. That's pretty niche down. That's business and then a niche within business. So if you're, I don't know, Gold's Gym trying to sell franchise opportunities, to me, if that podcast is getting 300 downloads a day, those are people that are either running businesses that are potentially, you know, people that you could bring on as a franchisee, or they're people that are looking to do that. So again, where else are you going to find that specific category of people, you know, and be so sure about who you're targeting? I don't know. To me, that type of thing is just very, very lucrative for an advertiser.
Yeah, but I mean, it's I guess maybe if you're not going after the downloads, you're not trying to get new and noteworthy all the time and being on the very top of the top podcast, but you want to be the best in I want to be the best gym podcast, then that could be the way to go. So I guess it's whatever strategy that you want to implement, and that's something we'll have to ask Ben about. What stories and successes have he seen going that down into that very niche down type industry? So that's why we're going to bring him on, because he's very big into that area and into the business podcasting arena.
Yeah, and I definitely also want to talk to him about this whole idea of finding sponsors and monetizing these podcasts, because I made it sound somewhat easy that all you have to do is find this niche that no one's targeting that might have this big market for potential advertisers, and then all you got to do is put those sponsors on there. But it's really hard, maybe, in podcasting still being somewhat of a new marketing arena for some of these advertisers. How do you present yourself to these companies and say, you know, you and I just explained to you, and you understand what I'm saying, that 100 downloads a day for a knitting podcast, those people are interested in knitting. But how do you kind of convey that message to this larger company, you know, Michaels or Hobby Lobby or something like that? How do you convey this message that this is a super targeted audience that, you know, they need to reach, and that they're probably not reaching now because these people are listening to podcasts instead of radio, or podcasts instead of watching television? So I think it's really interesting to see if maybe Ben has some ideas how to pitch yourself. I don't know if it's a media kit, if it's some sort of sales page. I don't know what it is, but I think it's a very interesting topic, and one that's only getting more and more important with podcasting having this bubble and kind of this resurgence, if you will. So with that, let's get on to the man who we can ask all these questions to and a whole lot more, and that's Ben Kruger in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Today's guest in the main event is a man who has more than likely been involved in some of your favorite podcasts, and you don't even know it. Ben Kruger and his crew at Authority Engine have made the podcasting game simple for anyone who has nothing but a great podcast idea and maybe some equipment. Ben has also recently begun his own podcast, where he teaches some of the techniques used for his clients and brings on some successful podcasters to give tips of their own. As Joe and I discussed in round two, podcasting can be a great way to get your message out to your audience or build one from scratch if there's nothing there yet. We've brought Ben on to talk about podcasting, running his own business, working with some of the biggest names in the online space, and a whole lot more. So without further ado, Ben Kruger, what's going on?
I'm psyched to be here, and really, really pumped to talk a little bit of shop on podcasting.
Yeah, podcaster to podcaster. So yeah, very excited. Now, before we get started, since we like to kind of dig right into the topic at hand, have you been a guest on any other podcasts that really kind of tell your background story for anyone that wants to learn more about you and where you came from?
Certainly. I was a guest over at Srini's podcast over at Blogcast FM. That was a really good interview where we kind of dug into a little bit of my history and my story, as well as a couple of, you know, action items for if you're looking to get into podcasting and that kind of stuff. I would say that's probably the best go-to interview. And then there's another one for the Tropical MBA, which has now been rebranded to the TMBA podcast, but that interview was a little bit more about the story of how I got started and kind of the baby steps that I had taken to get where I am now. So those are kind of the go-to, probably the top two that I would recommend.
So let's get into this podcasting thing. And in round two, Joe and I got into not necessarily a disagreement, but maybe a difference of opinion as far as podcasting goes. I kind of fought my case of niche or podcasting for specific niches, I think is a super exciting and a super big opportunity for people. You know, we used, I think, knitting as an example, but if you can kind of hone in on this whole knitting niche and create a podcast just for them, I think even though that might not have the number of downloads as other things, that's super valuable. Whereas Joe was thinking more generic podcasts, you know, like ours perhaps, because you can get more downloads in quantity. He's thinking that might be more valuable. What is your opinion on this whole niche podcast casting thing?
So I'm going to be a flip-flopper here. You're probably not going to like that, but I'm going to go with the I always recommend, it depends on what your goals are. Most people, when they start a podcast, they don't start with a very specific end outcome in mind. They just think, okay, well, I'm going to start a podcast, you know, I'm going to build my email list and it's going to be awesome. And that's pretty much that. And what I specialize in is helping people who already have operable businesses start podcasts that help promote and further market their businesses. So when you think of it from a marketing perspective, and when you think of podcasting as a tool that can help get your message out, the smaller the niche or the more defined the niche, the far more effective your podcast is going to be for creating a community around that niche. So let's take, for example, Hooked on Wooden Boats is a podcast at, literally is about building wooden boats and sailing wooden boats. You would not think that there's enough people out there, yeah, that would be interested in that. But the guy has a huge following. I mean, I don't know his exact numbers, but I know he's killing it. And you know, it's an extremely specific niche, but he has a great show. He offers incredible value for people who are interested in that specific topic. And then on top of that, he's built that community to all, you know, be one kind of cohesive unit, and they all kind of go back to his site and are part of that whole community. Whereas on the other side of it, you've got, you know, like let's say Entrepreneur on Fire, which is far more broad, far more general, and he's done very well with having kind of that broad general audience, but he also has huge download numbers. So I think the thing to keep in mind is, predetermine your end goal. What is it that you actually want to get out of the show? What kind of a community do you want to build? And then set about, you know, building that community in a way that makes sense by using different podcast elements. So different parts of the show, intros, outros, your content, all that kind of stuff. You know, your calls to action, how your website looks, how it all comes together, and what you offer value-wise to your listeners.
So let's say you're a listener of ours right now, and I know a lot of the people are more in that entrepreneur category. They don't have anything, but they want something. And say they decide they do want that podcast, and maybe they design something in their head that they do have that end goal in mind. They know where they want to get to, but they have nothing right now. They don't have a community built. They don't have a platform built. Do you suggest that they try to do that first, maybe through a blog or through a website before launching the podcast, or can they kind of build it from the ground up through the podcast alone?
So building from just a podcast is definitely possible. The biggest thing there is you have to find a space that is looking for that content. So whatever you want a podcast about, let's take Terry Lynn, for example. He started Start Your Online Store, Build My Online Store is his podcast. He started a little bit over a year ago, and now he gets over 30,000 downloads a month. And he literally started with no list, with no website, with no nothing. And now, you know, it's a year later, but he's got 30,000 downloads a month, which is, you know, pretty respectable. Whereas at the very beginning, I think he had 100 downloads the very first month, maybe like 300 the second month. So it was really, really slow progress to get going. Now, if you can build a small bed at the beginning, something to launch off of, then you're going to be a lot better off. You can grow a lot more quickly and you can get a lot more traction right off the bat. However, the at bare minimum, I recommend people have you're going to have a blog of some sort to get your podcast into iTunes, but have a blog that goes along with your podcast, as well as an email capture, so you can start building that email, that ever important email list that everybody talks about.
So for someone starting out, would you recommend starting, if they're trying to build up an audience, and I guess I know the answer probably, but would you recommend starting up the blog first because it's easier, or start up the podcast first?
I would say both at the same time. There's really no reason to delay it. The biggest thing is, and I'm gonna keep hammering on this point because most people really don't consider this very much, is to think of it from your listener's perspective. You've got your vision for who your target listener is. Why are they going to listen to or read your stuff over all the other content sources out there? What makes your show and your site or your source of information better than whatever else is out there for that specific target audience? And in that, you'll realize, okay, well, maybe my meat or what I'm talking about is better suited for audio, or maybe it's better suited for text, or maybe it's better suited for video tutorials, you know? So it really comes down to what medium best can portray the message that I'm trying to get across, and then how can I complement that with a couple other mediums? So, you know, whether that's text, video, audio, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, going back to the general versus very specific, you see a lot in iTunes, and we talked about this before, especially we'll just look at the business general topics in iTunes. A lot of them are these very general, broad topics, and I had mentioned before in round two, Dave Ramsey's very broad personal finance. You mentioned John Dumas, very broad entrepreneurship. Can someone with this very specific niche get into that type of slot up with Dave Ramsey and Dumas?
It's gonna be tough to get those kind of download numbers to really rank that highly with some of the guys in the general business space. However, what I want to impart on people is, if you're, let's say you are a consultant and you use your podcast to build trust with listeners, gain a little bit more audience, and as kind of that first initial connection with people that might become clients, and you make $500 a month per new client that you sign up. You don't need 200,000 downloads a month to get a couple of clients a month, and you know, one new client means $6,000 a year. So if you get one new client a month, you're doing all right, even though you only have, you know, maybe even a couple hundred downloads a month. You don't even need to break into the thousands if your goal is to, you know, let's say again you're the consultant. If your goal is to bring in a few more clients, then there's no reason to get all worked up about numbers when it's more about the quality of who's in your audience. Whereas if you are trying to get your podcast sponsored and it literally comes down to just the numbers, then it makes sense to be much more broad and much more accommodating, if you will.
Well, so that's more towards that niche thing. But let's say you're somebody like us, for example, and we are jumping in with both feet next to your Pat Flynn's, your John Dumas, your Dan Millers, all these guys that are super well established, but we're kind of taking that leap of faith that maybe we can find something just a little different in the same space. What if a client comes to you and that's their idea? Do you really try to push them more to a niche area just because the competition is so heavy, or do you think there's still space in that area right now?
So it comes down to value. One way to offer value is to do that niche down and find that niche that's seeking the kind of information that you can offer them. The other way to really provide value is to do something like what you guys are doing. Nobody else has the same podcast format that you guys do, and I really love that. Like, I was so psyched when I initially heard you guys' podcast, and I'm like, okay, thank you. It's somebody who's doing something for the entrepreneurs out there that's a little bit inspirational, and they've got a totally different format. They've got something new to offer the scene, and it's not because it's necessarily a different topic. It's not because necessarily it's niched down. It's because you guys are coming at it from a different angle. And you've got a new approach to an old problem. And I really, really appreciate that. So it comes down to either you can niche down and provide exactly what people are looking for, or you can kind of look at a larger audience and think, what hasn't been done? What new value can I offer? Because what you guys do essentially is get interviews that nobody else has gotten before. And there's huge value in that.
Well, then let me take this kind of a combination of niching down, but also being this space. And this is something that you've done, and you're still in this kind of business space, but you're niching down to target either podcasters, future podcasters, current podcasters, maybe looking to learn a few things. But I know talking to Tim Page, who I guess is your coworker, your employee now, and also a friend of yours, and he and I talked. He's your man, and he's good at what he does. But he and I have talked about before that you've somewhat struggled to break through to that, I guess, new and noteworthy level on your new podcast. Do you think maybe you've niched down too much?
So there's a possibility there that I have niched down too much. However, when I think of it from exactly who I want to target, so I'm looking to target people that already have online businesses, that are already have a proven cash flow and have been considering using podcasting as like the next step in marketing their business, the next step in moving their business forward, or people who have started a podcast that are generally in that same, you know, they've already got proven cash flow, they've already got an online business, and they have been using their podcast to market and grow their business. So that is not going to be a huge audience. You know, it doesn't even fit for guys like John Dumas, really. That's kind of a different type, different style of podcasting. Whereas what I have been targeting is people who make their money outside of podcasting, but use podcasting to drive that engine. So it's not going to be a huge niche. And so it is going to be a little bit harder to get into things like new and noteworthy, to get into those top ranked sections, because quite frankly, the numbers just aren't going to be there. But that being said, every one of my listeners is going to have much higher value to me personally and to my business. And I'm going to be able to provide them much more value for the exact problems that they're facing, because it is a little bit more focused like that.
So, and I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but I think this is something that may anyone listening looking to start a future podcast could hopefully listen and learn something from, because look, your podcast, it's targeted at us. I listen to every episode and I'm like, yes, I can put that to action today, you know? But I wouldn't have known about the podcast if it weren't for Tim Page saying, hey, this is exactly, you know, right down y'all's alley. Listen to it. And I listened to the first one. I was like, hell yeah. So I listened to the second one, and I've listened to one, you know, ever since, to the point where I wanted to ask you to come on as a guest and dig deeper. But do you think that, and I know you said, you know, who you're targeting is going to get super great value out of yours, but that new and noteworthy is the perfect way for people to find out about it. So it's like this catch 22, like you want to make it for a certain group of people, but you also want to get enough publicity so those people can find out about it in the first place. Is there anything you would do differently to maybe accomplish both things at once?
Yeah, so there's, I'll kind of go two different suggestions on this one. Is one, do reach out to other podcasts in your niche, and offer to do interviews for them if you've got knowledge that's really valuable to their audience, or if you've got, you know, some kind of method, or if you've got a story that's interesting to their audience. That's going to be the number one way to, you know, get new listeners to your show, is appearing on other people's podcasts that are really closely related or would have similar target audiences. And then the other thing that I want to bring up is, a lot of people don't quite understand that podcasting is spread by word of mouth. So you either hear about a new podcast on another show or on, you know, in some resource, a blog, a forum or something, or you're going to hear it through word of mouth. Like Tim Page told you, hey man, you got to check this out. Whether that's through social media, whether that's through literally me talking to you, whether that's through me sending you an email, whatever. It's almost always spread through word of mouth, because the content in that show solves a problem or really entertains or, you know, provides value for whoever is recommending the show. And they're going to go out and share it with whoever they think is going to find value in it. So it is a catch 22. It's one of those, you know, you've got to have the audience and their needs in mind first, in my opinion. So if you really solve the problem that your audience is facing, or you really provide a lot of value for them, the show will grow naturally. There are things you can do to help it, but the show will grow naturally because you provide that value, and your audience will literally share it with people that they think it would be helpful to, because then they get, in a, for lack of a better term, they get a little bit of street cred because they put you on to this new show that's really valuable, and so they got, they kind of get the jollies of giving a recommendation for a really cool show that really helped them.
For, since you have started in this, I guess, really small niche, how do you keep motivated, since maybe you aren't getting those download numbers? What are you doing to motivate yourself to keep putting out more free content?
Yeah, so that is a really good point. One of the things that I've been doing is I've been going into a lot of different paid entrepreneur forums. And this is essentially, I want to dig deeper and find what questions people have so that I can answer them. That's the biggest thing, is if people have questions about podcasting, I want to know about it, because then I can help answer it on the air. Because if they've got questions, everybody else is going to have similar ones. So that's one thing that kind of keeps me motivated. And then the other thing that kind of helps me keep pushing forward is, I continuously get emails, or, every once in a while I'll get a iTunes review that talks about how helpful my show has been to them, or how great it is. Or I'll get somebody trying to connect on Skype because they want to chat a little bit about their podcast. And then what really drives it home is when I get somebody who's interested in our services through the podcast. So if somebody wants to either launch a podcast or get their podcast edited on a regular basis, that's when I know that we're doing something that kind of has lasting value and is making an impact, even though it might not be the largest podcast in the world, that's for sure.
So when you're doing this, I guess you're niching down like their crowd or their audience, like what does that process look like? Because you said like you start with one thing that's their idea, but then it always goes into something else. How does that process go?
Yeah, so essentially one of the first stages in our launch a podcast program, it's like a 4-week program to where we walk you through the whole thing, build it for you, all that kind of stuff. The first stage is essentially hopping on the phone and chatting about their general idea, kind of getting a feel for where they're trying to go with it. And then I start digging. That's when I go into very specifically, what does their business look like right now? And who are their target clients, or who are their target customers right now? And then I kind of project a little bit forward. All right, who are your target customers going to be in 1 year or 2 years, based on where you're trying to go with your business, with your company, with the show, with the community, all that kind of stuff. And from there, so I kind of help them nail down who their actual target audience is. And the more specific that we can get, the better. That doesn't necessarily mean that we have to get super niche down with the show, but if we understand who their actual target audience is, then we can kind of figure out the best approach to really targeting those people, even if we do target a broader audience. So from there, once we've really, really clearly defined who it is they're going after, then we start thinking, all right, what are your goals as the podcaster? Are you trying to build your email list? Are you trying to become a bigger authority in your space? Are you simply trying to rub elbows with the top dogs in your industry? It really depends on what they are trying to do. And I help them narrow it down to their top one or two goals of starting the podcast. And then kind of melting those two together, along with a couple other factors that I'll throw in there. But we kind of melt those together into figuring out the most effective show format, the intro and outro scripts, the feel, the structure of the show, whether it's a interview show or whether it's a solo or co-hosted show, like all that kind of stuff, whether it's even an ongoing show. I've recommended a few times that people just do like a simple 10-part series that helps get their message out. and is not a recurring constant thing. A lot of people kind of get locked into that mindset that that's how you have to do it, but it's not. I mean, podcasting is such an open medium. You can really do with it what you want.
So for some of your clients who, I don't know, we'll just say that they failed in this podcasting endeavor, what are some of the common traits that you see when that happens?
So the most common thing is they don't consider their show from their listeners' point of view. I know I've hit this a couple times, and I hate to, you know, keep repeating myself, but the biggest thing is that they were vague in what they offer to the listeners. So the beginning of the show, a lot of times they'll talk about their cat and what that crazy thing that their cat did this morning, and he ate something weird, and you know, 10 minutes later, you're still listening to him talk about Fluffy, and you don't give two craps about Fluffy. You're trying to, like, you know, listen to whatever he's got for the show. Now, if you're a comedian and you're doing a podcast, sure, you know, that's kind of a different thing. But so that's one of them, is being unclear about what you offer and kind of moseying around at the beginning of the podcast. One of the other ones is audio quality. A lot of people will stop listening to a podcast if the audio quality is bad enough. If your audio quality is decent, it's not going to be that big a deal. But if it's on the lower side, you will literally lose interest, even if you have a decent show. And there's a couple other factors that are pretty common, but I think those are some of the top two, specifically not understanding what it is your audience wants from you.
So while we're on the topic of things you advise your clients to, or what you see them doing, one of the things I've heard you talk about on multiple occasions is having a call to action, but not too many calls to action. And I think that's kind of another catch-22. Like Joe and I, we've been putting a lot of focus on trying to get the reviews to try to stay in new and noteworthy and stay up there. But our email list has severely suffered because we haven't pointed anyone back to do that. And I think this is something that either bloggers and podcasters can benefit from. How do you maybe try to balance this out so that you don't end up at us, you know, like us at the end of new and noteworthy with nobody on our email list to blast it out to?
Yeah, I know exactly this problem. And it's a big one for podcasters because there's too many things you want people to do at the end. You want them to rate and review you in iTunes. You want them to subscribe in iTunes. You want them to go back and sign up to your email list. You want them to share your show via social media. And you can't give people that many calls to action. It's just not an option. This is a problem that hasn't quite been solved and hasn't quite been figured out by anybody yet, I don't think. But it's something that I'm testing a few things. So one of the approaches that I've been trying out is the concept that I've been calling the love page, with mixed results. I don't think it's necessarily better than just picking one call to action per episode and just switching it every episode. That's a method that I've seen that's pretty effective. But what I've been doing with the love page is essentially, at the end of every episode, I'll say, you know, if you like what we're doing here on Authority Engine, check out authorityengine.com/love, and you can help us out there. Essentially, on that page, there's four steps where people can help out the show. They can rate and review it in iTunes, as well as subscribe. They can send us feedback as Authority Engine so that we can improve the show. They can share it with social media, and they can sign up to our email list. Now, very rarely will you have somebody that goes and does all four of those steps, but usually somebody will go and do maybe the first two, or even the first one. So I ordered them in order of, you know, the importance of what I wanted them to do, which seems to have worked out pretty well, but it's a little bit difficult to... It's a little bit difficult to compare, seeing as I started my show with that format and I haven't tested out other exact calls to action yet. So that's something that's coming in the future of Authority Engine, because I want to kind of test the different approaches.
Well, we'll just ask you about our show and you can tell us if we've been doing it all wrong. But like, we started off with, okay, we're just going to focus on, like Dan mentioned, we're just going to focus on people leaving reviews or just downloading the episodes to stay in new and noteworthy. and we screwed the email list. Did we do something wrong? Should we have been focusing both at the same time? Because I know we both thought about it, but we're like, no, we really wanted, because you're only new and noteworthy one time and in the very beginning, so let's just focus on that. But did we do it wrong? Should we have been trying to pick up subscribers along with getting reviews in iTunes and downloads?
So I think there's one aspect to that, to where it can go one way but not another. So you want to, at the very beginning, I like the approach that you guys took for staying in new and noteworthy, because then you get discovered by more people, you get more subscribers, and if those subscribers stick around, in iTunes that is, and if those subscribers stick around, you can then later give them a call to action to go sign up to your email list. Whereas if in the first few episodes you were just pushing them to the email list and they weren't subscribing in iTunes or leaving a review in iTunes and you weren't getting more traffic that way, you really kind of limit yourself to only those first couple listeners, and you don't have that growth potential. So I would say the most important right off the bat is to get as many listeners as you can through encouraging subscribers and encouraging those ratings and reviews, because they will hear your message at least. They may or may not be signed up to your email list, but they'll at least hear your message. And then you can give them the call to action to either sign up to your email list or, you know, share via social media, that kind of stuff later.
So let's ask about our specific situation where Joe and I stand today. And this interview will be published after all this, but this, I think, can be applied to anyone listening who's got a show, a podcast, either in new and noteworthy or plans to at some point. We're there. We're at, you know, top four most times. We're super proud of this, but we're scared, you know what, Liz, about what's going to happen in 2 weeks when we drop off, because we've heard Dumas say, you know, he lost 40% of his listeners and then he had to start the slow climb up. Is there anything that we can do at this point to kind of hedge that from happening? Should we all of a sudden now stop asking for reviews because we think we've kind of got that position locked down for those remaining 2 weeks and just go all out trying to push people to the website? Or is there something else we should do?
So I think it's a combination of two things. Number one, I think that the most effective way to gain new listeners when you're not new and noteworthy is to go, like, reach out to other podcasters and be a guest on their show, provide value, and drive listeners back to your show. We've already talked about that. But for you guys in particular, I think pushing for at that very last week, I think you guys should keep pushing for new subscribers, ratings, and reviews so you can keep your rankings. And then that very last week is when I would push for email subscribers, because you're right. After that, you will drop out of new and noteworthy and you will see a hit in your download numbers. There's no question about it. But then you'll have a little bit of that, you know, what John was talking about is the slow climb. And what will help that slow climb progress more quickly is, you know, going on other shows, sharing your knowledge with other people, and helping get that word out there, as well as that base email list that you guys have gathered. So I would definitely recommend in that very last week to push hard for the email list, because that's when you'll have the most exposure. And, you know, if you start losing rankings in the last week, it's not a big deal.
Okay, so that's interesting, and I definitely think that's something we can put into practice. Now, let's talk about what you're working on right now, and that's your business, Authority Engine. And we've referenced it multiple times, but kind of take a start to finish about what it is and what you do.
Absolutely. So Authority Engine, as a whole, is kind of, we're trying to build a hub of podcasting knowledge for business owners that are really trying to take their business to the next level. And they want to use the podcast medium to do so. So whether that's to build a community, to build their lead funnel, to, you know, build their email list, all that kind of stuff. But the end goal of any of our clients and all of the episodes and that kind of stuff is to actually build and grow your business as a whole, not necessarily your podcast. So that being the case, we focus far more on your goals instead of, you know, necessarily increasing your numbers, because that might not necessarily coincide with your goals. So Authority Engine as a service, our service, we essentially offer two different types of services. One is ongoing editing and management. So To make it simple, when you record your podcast, let's say at the end of this podcast, you would save the audio recording, upload it to Dropbox, and send it to us, and then you would be done. What we do is all the back end stuff. So we edit it, we add intros, outros, take out all the ums, the mistakes, that kind of stuff. Add music, all that kind of silly, putting it back to the way it should sound. And then we also write up show notes, post it up into your blog and into your feed, and then publish it live to the world and to iTunes. So that is the editing and ongoing services. And then what we're really focusing on and have been for a couple weeks now is our launch service. It's actually a four-week program to where we help people that already kind of have a business, already have a little bit of cash flow going, to conceptualize and build a podcast that will really get them results in the long term for their business. So it's a four-week program. The first week is essentially planning. The second week is us coming up with a lot of the mock-ups for things like intros, outros, all that kind of stuff, because we actually build it for you. And so it's a huge time saver for people that, you know, for people that are running businesses. You're trying to run a business, not spend all your time on the back end. So, and then week three, we coach you through the process of recording your first couple episodes. And then week four, we design a launch plan so that you can get the maximum exposure in iTunes and then help you actually launch it with all of the different, what's the good word for it? The methods that we've found that really work and that really kind of push the podcast up there. So one of our recent clients, Andrew Udarian from E-Commerce Fuel, we did a launch with him a few weeks ago, and his show has been doing fantastic. It's got over 70 reviews, 5-star reviews in iTunes, and it for a little while was ranked in the first week number 4 in the business category. Not new and noteworthy, but in the business category. So that's generally what we try to help our clients do, is really nail down what it is they're trying to do, and then we build the podcast to help them get results.
Yeah, we're going to link to all that in the show notes. And I'll tell our listeners right now, if you're somebody that hasn't gotten involved with podcasting yet, but you're looking to, you might go to this website and see those prices and be taken aback a little bit, because it's not the cheapest thing out there. But if you have any kind of experience doing it, let me give you the warning before you get in too deep. It's not easy. It's not cheap if you do it on your own still. There's still money and lots of time involved. And the tax accountant coming out in me, if you have an existing business, this is a tax deduction as well. So you can write it off and save, 35% of that cost. So then that makes it a little more reasonable.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when we first started, I wasn't quite sure how to price our services. And since I've found that the audience that we've found that we've been able to most help is far more concerned with the value of their time and the value of what they will gain from a podcast, and they understand that it's a long-term, it's a marketing investment, it's not an expense.
Well, very good, and that's very good information, and everything you said has been very good, and especially because podcasting, supposedly, according to USA Today, is back. I don't think it ever actually left, but USA Today says...
it definitely did. Yeah, it had a bubble back in the day, and then it kind of crashed, and we're back now.
Well, it did, but I think, and I listened to, I don't remember, I think it was a Podcasters Roundtable we're talking about it, and if you look at it kind of number by number... Their stance was that it didn't actually drop. The buzzword podcast and all these new people coming in maybe slowed down a little bit. But as far as like consumers of podcasts, that didn't drop off. It just became, not the fad. But USA Today says it's back. And I know that a lot of people have taken note of that. There's new advertisers out in the area all of a sudden now trying to fish for new shows to sponsor. So I think it's a very good opportunity for any of our listeners to kind of jump in while the water's warm, so to speak. So I think everything you offered today was really good. And we'll definitely include links to everything you mentioned in the show notes. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today. It was awesome.
Thank you, fellas, for having me on. Really appreciate it. And I was just super psyched to be able to share a little bit of my knowledge, and hopefully I was able to help some of the community out there.
Very good. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, man.
All right. Cheers.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.